This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
A lot of minority and a lot of poorer communities were the ones that had their power shut off for days. And so looking forward, if we do need to do this type of emergency action in the future, we really need to think about how we can do it in a way that actually is really rolling, that actually allows people to have some power for some time to kind of create some heat in their house and maintain that.
All eyes have been on the Lone Star State recently, watching the grim and undeniable impact of climate change on a population completely unprepared. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with energy market expert Alex Gilbert about the devastating power outages in Texas amid a record freeze. We learn about Texas's unique power grid, look at what could have been done to prevent the massive blackouts, and examine policies around the globe that could help mitigate the effects of extreme weather events to come. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Alex Gilbert. Alex is an energy market analyst, and he joins me from Washington, D.C. Alex, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Alex.
Why don't you first explain for our listeners the component that has led to the current state of blackouts in Texas?
Yes, of course. So the important context here is that this is the worst energy shortage the United States has suffered in almost 2 decades. What is happening right now is not within normal planning parameters for electric grids. There has been a severe winter storm that has hit most of the United States, at least the continental United States, and it has caused very severe low temperatures and has stressed the electric grid in all sorts of places around the country. In Texas specifically, the grid, for a number of reasons, is struggling much more than other places. And what they're actually doing is they're trying to prevent a complete collapse of the electric grid. And so to do that, they've had to shut off power to millions of people. So the number is 4.5 million customers. But that's a customer account, so that's like a household. So the actual number of people that have been impacted by the outages could be as many as 10 million or more. And this is not just a matter of like losing power because it's a fall afternoon, you can go then read a book or something. This is in the middle of very cold temperatures in areas that do not have a high level of insulation for their housing. They are all, a lot of these households are dependent on electricity for heating their households. So people are in their houses for days freezing with coats on, with all other sorts of ways to try and stay warm. There have been a lot of people that have actually been admitted to hospitals because they're trying to burn things inside their house to keep warm. They have carbon monoxide poisoning. So this is a massive energy security issue, and it points to some very serious issues in how Texas has been running its grid, as well as the severity of what's happening on the weather side.
And explain how Texas is unique from other cooperative utility groups, this Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT.
Yeah, so when you look at how electricity is governed and managed in the United States, there's a whole bunch of different models that we use. ERCOT is one of 7 wholesale electricity markets that are organized. And so these 7 markets are responsible for about 2/3 of U.S. power production. And in these markets, you actually have utilities competing against each other and independent power producers to generate energy, which that energy and that electricity is then delivered to customers. So it's a competition. It's a way that we can actually try and keep prices down overall by making sure that the cheapest generators are operating and that we avoid some of the issues that we've had in the past with monopolist utilities. With Texas specifically, ERCOT is unique because it is largely a state-level entity. There are some parts of Texas that are served by other markets, but ERCOT is most of the state of Texas in terms of electricity demand and is responsible for operating the grid. So it runs the grid, it deals with the power plants that are bidding into the grid, and then it works with the utilities that are distributing that energy. So it's kind of like the middleman that's determining how the grid is operating at any time. And its goal is to try and make sure that the grid is always operating and people are able to have power.
Yes, you write on Twitter that there has been a ton of focus on ERCOT planning, you put in quotes, and whether certain supply resources met that plan. There was no plan. You go on to say it was a bet. It arguably failed, but here's the rub. Why don't you explain? What's the rub?
Yeah, so when you look at how ERCOT in the Texas market specifically works compared to other markets, it has a different design. So when we're talking about electricity, there's two things that we're worried about. One is capacity. It's just how many power plants do we have? Is that going to be enough to meet load at a certain point in the future? And then you have energy, and energy is the actual commodity. So that's what you pay on your bill in terms of kilowatt hours. So when you look at how Texas runs their electric market, they actually do not have any sort of mechanism for capacity. What they have is a really good energy-only market. It's designed so that the only way that generators get compensated for the most part is going to be based on those energy revenues. And so in order to try and encourage enough power plants to be around in case you have very stressful events like the winter storm we're seeing, ERCOT has built in very high prices. So normally, if you look at ERCOT prices, they're with current electricity prices, it's around $30 to $50 per megawatt hour. Sometimes a little bit less when there's not a lot of demand, sometimes a little bit more when there's some more expensive gas prices. But when you have an event like this, there's actually a price cap, and prices often jump to that cap, and that's $9,000 per megawatt hour. So that's more than 20 times what it normally is. And the idea is that if you have a few of these hours, that incentivizes companies to be around during those reliability situations. Other markets in the U.S. have similar types of pricing. It's usually not severe. And that's because they have either capacity markets or capacity obligations. They basically have some sort of way to do planning to make sure that they can meet the future demand.
When you're talking about pricing, you're not talking about somebody's utility bill and it's not going to go up 20 times, just to clarify. Why don't you explain who they're changing their prices for?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when you look at a market like Texas, what you have essentially are people that have power plants and then people that are serving customers. And so it's like a distribution utility. So each distribution utility is responsible for procuring enough power to provide power to their customers. And so for the most part in Texas, when you have these really high prices, it's the distribution utility that is paying those high prices to give you power. And those high prices are then averaged into your rates throughout the year. Now, there are, because Texas has a very deregulated system, there are potential ways to have a retail electricity provider that actually gets you to have direct access to the market. Basically, what that means is they pass through the cost directly to you. And there are a lot of people right now in Texas that are actually freaking out because they're now exposed to these really high prices. And so it's not a huge number of people, but there are some people that are facing multi-thousand dollar electric bills just for this last week. And so that's going to be raising a lot of, I think, consumer questions about whether that's an okay model. But generally, this is kind of something that's handled on the utility and the power plant side.
So when you talk about deregulation in Texas, this is a state that has had George W. Bush, Rick Perry, and then now Greg Abbott as their governors for 25 years now. What have those governors done to create this kind of situation? So explain how it could have been avoidable and maybe give examples of other places where they are able to overcome catastrophic natural disasters like this.
Yeah, so not to get too into the weeds, but the fundamental issue here is that Texas politicians and Texas as a state has wanted to have low energy prices to be attractive for both people, but really for businesses. They want to have low energy prices for businesses. And so what they're doing with the ERCOT market is they're trying to minimize cost to supply electricity, and they're, to a degree, getting that ability to deliver low-cost electricity by not paying for excess capacity. So they don't have a bunch of extra power plants waiting around. They don't necessarily have the a capacity mechanism so that when you do have an event like this, they don't actually pay for power plants to exist and to just be there in preparation. Whereas if you look at most other models in the U.S., if you look at a system that's a wholesale market with a capacity market, they actually have an obligation for power plants to be around at a certain time, and they get paid every single year. And so instead of having the Texas model where once every 10 years you might have prices go really high, you kind of levelize that off over the course of 10 or 15 or 20 years. We also have an alternative model on just a vertically integrated utility, which is what we historically did and which about one third of the country still does. In there, the utility is closely overseen by the Public Utility Commission of the state to make sure that they have enough capacity for meeting these type of situations, and they roll those into rates. What was happening in Texas is that to try and minimize the normal costs, to try and make sure that they could be as business and friendly and attractive a state as possible, they have designed this system that does not necessarily have the same type of consistent prices and costs for reliability. And I think right now they're paying for it.
Walked by the rain, driven by the snow, I'm drunk and dirty. Don't you know that I'm still willing? Out on the road, late last night, I seen my pretty Alice in every headlight. If you give me weed, white sand, wine, and you show me a sign.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to energy market analyst Alex Gilbert. So, Alex, we're talking about the Texas outages, and I want to read to you a couple sentences from a Texas Tribune piece about the storm and the blackouts. Quote, "The outages during the storm far exceeded what ERCOT had predicted in November for an extreme winter event. It's estimated that about 80% of the grid's capacity, or 67 gigawatts, could be generated by natural gas, coal, and some nuclear power. Only 7% of ERCOT's forecasted winter capacity, or 6 gigawatts, was expected to come from various wind power sources across the state." So that kind of tells you a little bit about the reality of renewables during all of this. But how has ERCOT come up with these forecasts, and where have they fallen short? Is that the problem, or has it been more about not investing in, let's say, better insulation for its gas lines? And then I guess those questions aren't necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yes. So that, I think that that's an important point, is that these two things are related. So ERCOT does, like all other major electric grids, continual assessments of reliability to make sure that if there are certain events that happen, they have enough power to meet those events. And so a lot of the numbers that people are looking at is that prior to this season, ERCOT's worst case extreme scenario for demand was around 67 gigawatts. Before power went out, they were actually forecasting a peak as high as 74 or 75 gigawatts. And so that's like a 10% miss, which is huge for this type of situation. But on top of that, they plan for a certain amount of outages. And so even though people talk about like natural gas or coal or nuclear being reliable, the reality is that all plants have potential reliability and availability issues. You can't always run a plant all the time. And so when we have these type of events, you usually are going to plan that because you have all your units running and there's a lot of issues and there's potential maintenance stuff, that you'll have some number of plants that are suffering outages. So they are not able to produce electricity like they were expected for some reason. When ERCOT was doing its assessment for this year, it looked at its outage scenarios and determined that they had a certain level of forced outages that they were expecting. The reality is what happened is that the level of forced outages was way, way above their expectations. And so the numbers that ERCOT's released so far is it seems that almost 30 gigawatts of coal, natural gas, and nuclear was offline and was not available like they expected. And so we've seen load shedding between 15 and 20 gigawatts. All of that load shedding is essentially due to the fact that those plants are not there and they were expected to be there. There's also a lot of concern, and I think that this will be part of the post analysis, about whether there's just not enough gas in the natural gas pipelines. And one of the big issues here, I think more than anything else, and my big takeaway, is that Texas was depending too much on just natural gas to meet this peaking demand. Natural gas is a primary energy source in Texas, but if you look at the expected capacity that was supposed to supply to this event, I think it was around 60 to 65% was supposed to come from natural gas capacity, and that has not materialized. I think around 40% of natural gas plants that were expected to be there were not there. And that is for a mix of reasons, both weatherization at the plant level, but also gas supply issues. And so this, to me, says that we have some sort of issue and a disconnect between the electric grid and the gas system, and that has caused this kind of cascading overall effect.
So we've seen it in California, where we have wildfires have shut down massive amounts of power, and we've seen it here now in Texas with this cold snap, where these big utilities that are well-funded are not prepared. They're simply not prepared for the type of extreme weather that is becoming more normal. I mean, in Texas in 2011, they saw some freezing temperatures and gas wellheads locked up and coal plants seized up, but that didn't seem to come into their calculus this fall. What markets would survive something like this more effectively? And what kind of planning goes into that, where we can take some lessons away and maybe apply them to an ERCOT moving forward?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think there's kind of two components. One, on the extreme weather side. Electric grids have historically had to prepare for extreme weather, and the energy system has had to deal with these type of peak scenarios. The issue is that historically, a lot of the focus for the electric sector has been on summer peak demand. And that's because that's when the highest demand would be for an electric grid across the course of a year, due to very large amounts of air conditioning. And we see that for almost all of the electric grids in the United States. And so our reliability planning was focused on those heat waves. And when you look at how things are changing moving forward, we do expect that overall the amount of extreme weather happening will increase. And so as just a planning perspective, even thinking about a heat wave, it's hard to figure out how you can model a heat wave that hasn't happened yet. And one of the things that we're seeing consistently too is that these extreme weather events that are happening are not just small areas. They're usually very large areas, and that can have some issues for kind of the resilience and the system design. The second part of that is how the individual markets are handling this. And this is one of the big things I want to emphasize, is that this was an extreme case of weather, but it was not necessarily unprecedented, and it wasn't necessarily unexpected. So 10 years ago, the same thing happened in ERCOT. It wasn't as severe weather, but they did have rolling outages that impacted millions of people. And a large factor that contributed to that was forced outages at power plants. Texas and ERCOT did not do anything different in the last 10 years to prepare. So even if this storm had been a little bit less severe, there still would have been issues. Where if you look at other places in the surrounding area, like El Paso, which is not on the ERCOT part of the grid, El Paso has not had these forced outages because it prepared after the 2011 event. More broadly, if you look at energy markets across the country, there have been a number of things that have been wake-up calls, and some of them have been heated and some of them haven't. So in 2014, we actually had a similar polar vortex that hit Texas in the middle of the country, hit the East Coast. And in that scenario, we actually got down to, I think, only about 1 gigawatt away from having to institute rolling outages in the middle of very severe weather across the East Coast and into Chicago. And in that scenario, what we actually saw was that there was a lot of forced outages that were happening too. And a fair number of the gas outages were caused by this gas-electric lack of coordination issue. And since then, PJM, one of the main markets of the region, has reformed how they do capacity compensation. And so far, it seems like that has been more successful. And in more recent events, they are having a lower forced outage rate because companies are preparing ahead of time. But the overall issue is that there are these extreme events, and sometimes we don't have grid operators learning from each other or exchanging lessons. And even just things like, how do you manage one of these events when they're happening? I think if we look at what California had in terms of its response versus Texas, California was very good about communication. They had a very good way to talk with customers. to warn them ahead of time, to call for conservation after the blackout started last summer. Whereas in Texas, I think ERCOT's communication has been very spotty, and it's been really frustrating for a lot of people in the state. And that's also goes beyond just ERCOT. And state policymakers and politicians were not really there ahead of time. People were really surprised by how severe the storm was and by how unprepared everyone was, because there just has not been good communication. And so there's some of those non-technical lessons that we're going to need to learn from this event as well.
Yeah, the ERCOT officials are saying that, you know, if they hadn't imposed these rolling outages earlier, that they were seconds or minutes away from catastrophic failure. Now, there are, you know, over 4 million Texans who would probably argue that this is pretty catastrophic, but they're talking about months of blackouts rather than days or weeks. That is actually probably more revealing than reassuring, in my opinion. It seems like ERCOT might be thinking that they're covering their butts on this one, but they're actually revealing the flaws in the foundation of how they do business.
Yeah, on that quickly, just as someone who watches electricity markets and pays attention to a lot of these things, this is really bad. This is a humanitarian catastrophe right now, and it's going to, I think more and more stories are going to reveal that, but it could have been much, much worse. And so as mad as I think a lot of people are at ERCOT right now, the grid operators and the people working at the power plants, they've been working really hard to try and maintain what power they can. It's really like a triage situation. And if you were to actually have the grid go out, it's really hard to see how you can restore the grid. The grid is really complex. You have what's called black start capabilities at certain power plants. You have to bring the grid back online very slowly. And in this case, it would be complicated by the fact that a lot of plants that you'd be expecting to help you bring the grid back online are suffering outages. And so there was a time during the operations where it definitely seemed like they made the call that no matter what, they had to shed load or else they could lose the entire electric grid, which is by far the worst scenario. And I think that the decision to do that was right. I think the problem has been how the outages have been described and how they've been implemented. So they described it initially as rolling outages, and rolling outages are kind of the first step that we're doing when we're in emergency grid management to make sure that we can keep the grid operating. And rolling outages usually means like you'll lose power for half an hour over the course of an hour, and it'll kind of come back and around. In this case, because it was such a massive amount of load that they needed to shed, there are people that lost power for days, and they basically just turned off circuit breakers for certain neighborhoods. And if you looked at the people that actually had their power shut off, because power was focused on maintaining critical infrastructure like hospitals that are typically in wealthier neighborhoods, a lot of minority and a lot of poorer communities were the ones that had their power shut off for days. And so, looking forward, if we do need to do this type of emergency action in the future, we really need to think about how we can do it in a way that actually is really rolling, that actually allows people to have some power for some time to kind of create some heat in their house and maintain that.
Well, it's floating down in Texas. All the telephone lines are down. Well, it's flooding down in Texas. All the telephone lines are down. Well, I've been trying to call my baby. Well, but I can't get a single sound.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to energy market analyst Alex Gilbert. So, Alex, in early 2018, we had a guest on Sea Change Radio, Chris Dedecker, and he was talking about how the European model is that they have kind of built in a system that does not allow for these kind of brownouts and blackouts, that they're always going to be delivering electricity, but people are going to be paying much higher rates than they have here. The problem wasn't just efficiency. We have too much reliance on that as a barometer. And the real problem is this human appetite for comfort and growth. And we can see in an economy like in a lot of places in Texas, where people are just rolling their air conditioning 8 months a year and then rolling their heat for the other four. The realities of the quote-unquote free market don't come into a spotlight until we have a cataclysmic event like these freezes in Texas. I guess the question is, how can we best kind of navigate that from a policymaking standpoint to try to get Americans to realize that they can't always have their cake and eat it too?
Yeah, so I think that that is one of the biggest challenges, and that is something that you see with the different ways that states and electricity markets approach things, is that there's a cost trade-off between having very, very high reliability and protecting against these type of extreme events, and not having that, but having cheaper power. And so that is a political question that you need to figure out how to determine using our political forums. But the problem when it comes to electricity these days is it's not as simple as it used to be. Historically, you had vertically integrated utilities that were overseen by a state public utility commission, and you had some level of federal regulation that kind of like dealt with utilities dealing with each other. Today, the grid is so much more complex in terms of the actors involved. You have quasi-governmental agencies called the ISOs, which ERCOT is part of, that handle a lot of management and planning for the grid. They're overseen by a federal regulator, but it's not a typical kind of regulatory setup compared to what most people think of. It's not like a state PUC with utilities historically. And so when you're trying to think about this and determine how do we as a political body determine the level of risk that we're comfortable and acceptable taking, it's not really clear that the public has much input on that, and their ability to influence those discussions is pretty limited. And people a lot of times don't think about electricity until it's not working. And I think that that is a huge problem. I think that that might be changing, especially as we do have new technologies like microgrids and like solar panels for your house that allow people to engage more with the electric system. But the fundamental issue for me is that electricity and energy supply generally are critical infrastructure that underlie everything else in the economy. And what you're seeing right now in Texas is that without that, you start having other things happening to other parts of critical infrastructure. There are hospitals that are struggling right now, so that's exacerbating things with treating COVID and even things like providing vaccinations. But you also have issues with the water supply there. So when we have such a substantial failure of the energy system, that's when people pay attention and they realize how it is kind of the bedrock for everything else that we're doing. But the mechanisms to do something about that are not necessarily clear. I think that we need to have a much broader debate in this country about how much reliability we're willing to pay for and how do we do this in a way that doesn't necessarily impose a lot of costs on poor people that otherwise are struggling with their energy costs as is. And so it's a fine balance to strike. And I think regions are doing it in different ways, but there needs to be a lot more thought about it as we look to the future with more climate change induced severe weather.
Energy market analyst Alex Gilbert. Alex, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Melvin Sparks, Linda Ronstadt, and Roomful of Blues. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.